Welcome to the Marketing Millennials, the No BS Marketing Podcast. I'm Daniel Murray, and join me for unfiltered conversations with the brains behind marketing's coolest companies. The one request I tell our guests, stories or it didn't happen. Get ready to turn the f*** up.
One of the examples I give in the book is there's a cookie brand. I won't say the name of the brand, but there's a brand that sells cookies, and a lot of people love the cookies and a lot of people hate the cookies. And it's not that the cookies are the best on the market. It's actually the fact that they have both lovers and haters, and people debate this stuff online that is one of the factors that makes this brand so powerful. And we see this all the time in sports, in politics, in any part of our culture where something bubbles to the top and to the mainstream. There's usually an element of people who love it and hate it. And if you don't have that, then it's really not that interesting.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Marketing Millennials podcast. Today, I have a great guest, John Davids, the author of Marketing Superpowers. We're going to chat about building community, why it's important to build community, how to stand out, how to create a belief. I'm excited for you all to chat, but I want to kick it over to John and ask him, how did he get into marketing? So John, how did you get into marketing?
Well, Daniel, awesome to be here. Thanks so much. Fan of the pod. I got into marketing because I really wasn't too good at anything else. And I stumbled into it in college and managed to make a bit of money. And when you realize what you're good at, it's kind of good to stick with that. So I've been fumbling along, doing okay for the last couple decades. I got into marketing initially by starting a blog. I like to say I started BuzzFeed before BuzzFeed was around. And really, I started creating content on the internet. And I had a little team of writers that I put together in my college. And we started to write about things like relationships and fashion and sports and pets and anything that we could write about that we thought would get attention on the internet. This is back in the 2003-04 timeframe. And before we knew it, through a series of kind of lucky slash smart partnerships, we got onto a bunch of the big portals. That was back in the days of MSN and Yahoo dominating the internet. And we got our articles featured and managed to build a pretty big audience and build an advertising business out of that. So that's how I got into it. What I like to say is I figured out early on how to hijack attention on the internet. And the way that we've been doing that has been evolving over time. So it used to be getting content to go viral on social. And even before that, it was figuring out how to use the web portals. Then it became influencers. And I've just been kind of getting better and better at that over the years.
I always say to people that attention is the number one goal for marketing. I don't care what people say, because if you're not getting attention, you're not, nobody's seeing it. But I want to go into what is these marketing superpowers and also go into how to utilize them. I know what the main marketing superpower you're going to say is, but I want you to tell everybody what that is.
The easiest way to think about it is look at somebody like Mr. Beast or Kim Kardashian. They can launch a brand and have it become the number one brand in the category almost overnight, and they make it look easy. And some people will look at that and say, well, John, that's because they're celebrities, like easy answer, and I can't do that myself. And what I like to point to is there are so many more examples of celebrity or influencer brands that come along that you've never heard of because they crashed and burned. And the ones that actually do make it and do connect with their consumer, it's because they figured something out and they've tapped into it. And the way I think about it in marketing superpowers is the influencer formula. You know, I've worked with 20,000 influencers over the last decade over at my agency, Influicity. And I started to see a pattern of the ones that do really well and the ones that are able to connect with the audience and build on a consistent basis long before they figure out how to monetize or sell anything, they're doing something specific. And I narrow it down in the book to three things. It's called my movement formula. They have a unifying belief. They create faith in that unifying belief. And they give people some kind of action to take. So a super simple example would be someone that talks about health or weight loss or fitness. And they might say, you know, I take an ice bath every morning, or I go for a 10-mile run, or I do whatever it is that I do. And then they'll start to put content out that creates faith around that. Personal experience, books, articles, experts, this and that. And then the action usually is something like join me, follow me, copy me. And those movements tend to do better than anything else. And we've seen there's 100 examples I can give in the book, but that really is the core of it.
I always say on this podcast, like, what is that hill you would die on? Or everybody needs to stand on something. Otherwise, you're basically nothing as a company, as a creator, as a brand, whatever you want to call yourself. You need to stand on some roots of belief. And it has to be semi-polarizing, that there's the other side of the coin that says, no way, that's something that I don't believe in. And something like, for example, you said cold plunges. There's a lot of people who are like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do that every morning. I'm going to get in a cold plunge. And then there's other, like, I don't believe that. That's not going to do anything. I am debunking this. And if you stand on that hill and keep riding that hill, you're going to have those followers keep following you and fans ultimately.
It's so funny you say that, Daniel, and maybe you got a copy in advance. I didn't send it to you, but you've got some premonitions here. So there's a chapter in the book where I talk about the power of polarization and having lovers and haters. And if you have no haters, it's very hard to have lovers. One of the examples I give in the book is there's a cookie brand. I won't say the name of the brand, but there's a brand that sells cookies, and a lot of people love the cookies and a lot of people hate the cookies. And it's not that the cookies are the best on the market. It's actually the fact that they have both lovers and haters, and people debate this stuff online, that is one of the factors that makes this brand so powerful. And we see this all the time in sports, in politics, in any part of our culture where something bubbles to the top and to the mainstream. There's usually an element of people who love it and hate it. And if you don't have that, then it's really not that interesting.
I forgot who said it, but it's kind of like a kind of a religion community that you have, like being part of like a sports team, like let's say football, every Sunday I'm going to watch my team. I'm diehard for that team. When you see someone else in a jersey of that team, you're part of that community and they're part of that community. So you can start a conversation with that person and you have that similar belief that you love that team and that's what unifies you. And that's what people want nowadays, is that feeling of belonging to something, that feeling of making it easier for people to connect with some other people. Is that what some things you're seeing on your side?
You're literally pulling from chapters here. So organized religion is a big one that I use. And I talk about how organized religion, which probably was the first movement in history, certainly the first recorded movement in history, where you have a unifying belief, faith, and action. And literally the terms belief and faith come from religion. I mean, those are religious terms, but the belief that this is the way to success. And, you know, when it comes to religion, it's usually do these things and you'll go to heaven. There's some version of do these things and you'll succeed in the afterlife. That's kind of the core belief. Faith is all of the books and the seminars and the places of worship. There's all kinds of faith builders. And then action is a way to live, but there's also usually a monetary action. In fact, in most cases, there's a monetary action that comes with the faith. You have to donate to the church, donate to charity. And so that's a big one. Sports is another big one. I'll give you an example. I love to use this analogy when I'm talking to people about it, is I'll say, name your favorite sports team or athlete or Netflix show or band. Name some like entertainment thing that you love, and they'll name something. And then I said, cool, name your favorite brand of toothpaste. And they'll say Crest or Colgate, one of those two. And I'll say, cool, which do you feel more passionate about? Your favorite Netflix show that you can't stop binging, or your toothpaste? And they'll say, of course, it's the Netflix show. And I'll say, okay, that's a brand, just like your toothpaste is a brand. But there's something happening on the Netflix show that's making you much more into it, or the sports team or the music. These are all brands. They're all created equally at the start, but there's some elements to these things that you love that are different from the things that you just kind of use and don't love. And I would boil that down to some form of a movement.
Yeah, I want to dive into, so if I'm a brand or I'm trying to start some sort of community with my customer, how do I start making that initial belief for my brand? So how do I start formulating that?
So the very first step you take can actually start long before you have a business. So there's obviously people listening who have businesses, they're already into it, and there might be some that are thinking about it and haven't started yet. Creating content around that belief. So figuring out what is it that I want to do, what I want to build in the future. I want to build a fitness center. I want to build a dog care facility, whatever it is that you want to build. What is the core tenet or the core belief that you have that you're going to bring to that? Obviously, if you're passionate about something, you have a certain set of beliefs on how that thing should be. What's that thing? Figuring out what I call the form of content. So how are you going to start to get that message across? Do you want to blog? Do you want to do a podcast? Do you want to make short clips or long videos? What's something that you can do and that you feel comfortable with? And then the consistency of actually putting it out there. And the last thing I'll say on that is there's this concept that I call the main character, which is that every really powerful brand or movement has a main character. And if you're the founder of a company, 99% of the time, it's going to be you. You're going to be the main character because you're the one that's the most passionate about it. So thinking about who is going to be delivering this message, what format am I going to be delivering it in? And then there's basically three ways to do it, which is you can either document your own journey, you can report on other people's journeys, or you can start to teach something. And so putting those pieces together and just starting to make the content, the earlier in your journey, the better, even long before you've started your business.
I know you said you worked with 20,000, have worked with over 10, 20,000 inputs. So what are the difference between the ones that actually have that work community versus the influencers that just have following?
So many differences. The one that I would boil it down to above all else is they are super narrow in their focus. The term I use is a wedge. They have some kind of wedge that they use. You could also say a niche, but I like to say a wedge in the sense that they believe something and they express it and it's a little bit different and it's unique and they're able to convey it in an interesting way. And I've seen this happen. There was one of the very first influencers I ever worked with was a beauty YouTuber. So she was creating YouTube content on beauty. This is back in like 2012. And she was creating content that was so interesting and such a different take on the beauty products she used, why she used them, how they were different from other people and other brands and what other YouTubers at the time were saying. And she just hit on these same points over and over again. And it was almost like if you watched one video, you knew exactly what to expect because she had done almost like the same video 20 times already. She had made the same points over and over. But people find comfort in that. So super focused for a very long time, such that you're just known for one thing. And those people tend to have the most engaged, almost religious audiences that follow them forever.
I always say to people, like for me, when for podcasting or social or anything is just consistency and just being a little bit above the average of the content out in the world. It's not too difficult of a formula. It's more, most people aren't consistent enough that they last longer than 3, 6, 9 months to a year to be able to get to a point where, because trust and following and fans, you can't build them overnight unless you maybe have like a hit Netflix show or a hit something where people can, like Challengers just came out. Those two actors are now skyrocketing in fame because so many people love that movie. That doesn't happen to everybody. Most people have to go through the traditional path of create enough content over a long period of time with anything, working out, anything you do. This is a long consistency of a long period of time and putting out things that are above average. And like what you said, consistency also means consistency of messaging, consistency of content, consistency of your wedge. It doesn't only mean consistency of putting things out on a daily basis.
100%. I'm not sure if you released the video of this, but I'm going to hold this up to you at least so you can see it. But there's a graphic in the book where I show how growth happens. And effectively what I say is the people that pop, just like you said, the two actors and challengers that seem to be popping right now, I bet you if we look back on their biographies, they've probably been doing it for 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. And they hit upon a whole bunch of stuff in those years that got them to the point where now they're popping off. So it's always harder than it looks because when it happens, all the onlookers will just say, oh, well, it just happened for you. But they didn't see the 5 years that you were toiling away on the podcast, on the blog, on the speaking circuit, on the audition. So it's always easier than it looks, for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, if you listen to their stories, I mean, one of the actors was like Dear Evan Hansen. He was in a bunch of different movies, and he just got that opportunity, that call, because the director saw something in him. So it is that consistent work over time that people don't see that helps you win in the long run. So I do. I think that's a great point. I think pop off is just what the world, like, those people weren't popular before, but that's because they only noticed them in that moment of time. But I bet you there was those raving fans over the years that started recognizing those people until they got to that peak of popularity. So
yeah,
that's a great point.
The other thing is what happens, and I've seen this also happen in the world of brands and influencers, is you have these ones that rise too quickly. And I call that 15 minutes of fame. So there's this quadrant that I use called the axis of influence, where I show how influence grows in different ways. And one of the things that can happen is you pop off really fast, you have 15 minutes of fame, and you haven't built any of the muscles, any of the credibility, any of the trust, any of that secret sauce that you need to sustain yourself. And those brands fade very quickly, more often than not. So there's got to be some foundation there for you to actually sustain yourself.
It's the classic virality moments that people have. So, I mean, they went viral on a platform. They just started, they went viral on the platform. They get that quick fame, but nobody knows what to follow them after that viral. They just follow them because of that hit piece of content or that hit piece of stuff. But if you don't continue putting out things like that or continue on the same road, it's hard for some of the people that you went viral to even stick around with you. So I actually think people shouldn't try to get viral. I think they should just try to build that muscle early and start making mistakes when nobody's following you before you actually gain a following. That's my, like, when I started, nobody was following me and nobody cared what I had to say. And then it just took years of people, me just putting out content for some people to listen.
Anonymity is a gift early on, and you make mistakes in the darkness so that you can thrive in the sunlight. How long did it take you? I mean, this is such an awesome podcast with a lot of listeners. How long did it take you in your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I started in October 2020. So actually, May 2020 is like when I really started. I put out one episode, and then it just consistency. I just lasted longer than everybody else. I think that's what, like, separated me for a long time is, but I also had other places of grabbing attention. Like you said, I grew a LinkedIn following to be able to have a distribution engine. So the podcast got distribution. So it was a bunch of pieces that led up to that. But there's also me being really interested in social media for a long time and studying it and not doing anything with it before I even started doing anything. And I started some social media accounts that grew a little bit that were flops, but nobody knew about them. So it kind of led me to the moment to be able to do what I'm doing right now. So like you said earlier, there's a lot of things that people don't see in the background that you do before setting up. And I would not say I'm the best podcaster and out there. I would say I'm not, but I will say what led me to where I am is just staying consistent and bring on great guests that say cool stuff all the time. So
that's a big one. One of the concepts I talk about is piggybacking. And so one of the strategies you can use to grow is piggybacking off other people, other concepts, other things. And a lot of people do that. I mean, look in the music business, how many producers and artists are there who grew because they managed to do duets and collabs with other people that arguably are much more talented. And we see this all the time. So just, I like to say, people love to make excuses. And I talk to so many entrepreneurs and so many marketers, and there's no shortage of excuses as to why you can't do something or why it won't work for you. But everything you just said is a great example. Like, hang around for longer than everybody else. Everyone is doing one podcast a week. You can do two podcasts a week. Your podcast isn't growing fast enough. Cool. Start a LinkedIn and promote it from the LinkedIn. Like, there's so many ways to hack the axis. Again, the axis of influence I talk about. So how do we hack the axis? How do we sort of figure out how to climb the ladder when it's not so clear for us? There's always a way. You just got to be able to stick with it.
And I also think a lot of people just choose a median that the audience isn't necessarily hanging around on at first. So a lot of people, like, say they want to, like, let's say they want to go after, like, electricians, for example, and a lot of electricians aren't on LinkedIn. So, like, if you start building a following and try to make a following on LinkedIn for electricians, it's going to be a lot harder than maybe going to Facebook or maybe going into communities or maybe going into. So a lot of people forget that you have to go where your audience hangs around in to actually, and that's, like, the way to get quicker attention is be where your audience is at first. You can do that other stuff later, maybe be the first on LinkedIn to be the electrician, but do that after you have start being in places where people are paying attention.
Yeah, picking the right spot is so important. And I'll tell you something funny. So I've got maybe 60 or 63,000 followers on LinkedIn at this point, put out content very consistently. And before I grew an audience on LinkedIn, I posted the exact same content to Twitter, X. And I would post the same thing to X and the same thing, it was called Twitter at the time, and the same thing to LinkedIn. And I would do this constantly. And all of a sudden on LinkedIn, it started to pick up. And on X, it would just die on the vine. Nobody cared what I was saying on X. And the reason is because my audience, the people that cared, business people, marketers, entrepreneurs, of the folks that I was talking to, were more on LinkedIn and were more, I guess, interested in that type of content when they were on LinkedIn. And so you can take the exact same piece of content, and on LinkedIn, it gets read by 200,000 people. And on Twitter, it gets read by 400 people. And I can't explain it. And really, there's no point in even trying to figure it out. That's just the way it is. Don't fight it. Go with what the audience is responding to.
I always say focus. Like, if you can give two channels 100%, like, start one, give it 100%, see what clicks. Because if you figure out what is working on LinkedIn and actually going off, you can change it to fit the other platform. And that's what I've done with a lot of things. Like, I figured out LinkedIn and it let me to grow a little bit of a Twitter following. I figured out Twitter. It helped me build an Instagram. And usually they care about the same concepts and beliefs that you said people care about on all those platforms. It's just the way you deliver those that and package it up on those platforms, because every platform has a different way of consuming. So you've got to be able to package it up in a way where people are going to actually understand.
Totally. And I'll just add one thing to that. People have different interests. A lawyer might be interested in legal content, but that lawyer might be interested in cars and sports and animals too. But they're going to go to different places to get each of those types of content. And so where you are putting the content to reach the person, it's not that those people aren't there or aren't everywhere. It's just that they might go to this place or that place to get that kind of content you're putting out. So that makes a lot of sense. Can I ask you a question? I'm curious, because you've got this amazing success with podcasts, like you mentioned. What do you think of the podcast space today in terms of how crowded it is versus standing out? What's been successful for you?
I, like, hate to say this answer, but it's like getting in before that happened. I think if you want to get in now, you either have to come up with, like, a new type of format or something different, or just be really great and have a really great personality, or already have an existing distribution to back up the podcast. So I do believe podcasting also has other benefits besides attention. I think networking is, like, the number one networking place in the world. I think it's easier to ask someone to pick their brain for 30 minutes and come on your podcast than ask anybody to do that in real life, because nobody's going to do that in real life, but most people will come on your podcast. So it is an underrated hack, but I think it's also figuring out how to do distribution in your podcast. Like, if you're really good at video and you can take the podcast and use it as a content engine to feed a lot of other channels that you're going to do, like LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube Shorts, IG Reels, and know how to. But there's, like, jokes going around the internet now, like, people are giving everybody mics, like, microphone should be cost $10,000 because it should be harder to get into podcasting. But I think it's hard. It's easy. Like you said, like most platforms, you see the people who were really successful and popular are the ones who got in really fast and got in quickly. Most platforms are like that. And then there are some people who break that mold, but most of the people who are the most popular have been earlier on those platforms than other people.
So true. And you just gave away a dirty little secret, which is even if nobody listens to your podcast, having a podcast is great for getting to talk to people. And no one's going to say, what's the audience of your podcast before they come on? They're just going to, oh, yeah, cool. Most people never get asked to be on a podcast. So it's a great networking tool. But yeah, that's really solid. Getting early and sticking with it, that's been the trend with almost every single, whether it's email, SEO, certainly Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Twitter. A lot of the people that are big because they were early and they stayed there. And if you can do that, you can really define the platform. You almost become the model of what everyone else looks to. So being early is something you have to do. And in order to be early, you have to be able to experiment in a lot of places, right? People who were early on Instagram in 2011, let's say, or whenever Instagram launched, didn't know that Instagram would become what it is in 2024, but they took a chance and they invested in it. So you've got to be willing to do some experimenting also.
I think anybody should start. That's not to deter people not to podcast. I just think it is what I'm trying to say. It's harder to podcast now than ever. So if you are going to do it, like you need to have outside distribution because it's hard to grow podcasts or figure out that channel. You got to have something that is semi-unique, that is different than other podcasts in your space. So look in your space and look what other people are doing. You got to have a strong like wedge of what you said. Like, what is it so unique about your podcast that I got to listen to? Is it the person, you as the person? Is it the guest you bring on? Is it like right now what's big is two people talking with expertise on? But it is a great way to show your expertise. And I think it's also a great way use to create other content in a low left way for yourself too. So I think people should start podcasts. I just think just know it's really hard to start a podcast now. It's hard to scale a podcast right now.
It's great for depending on where you are in the funnel too. So as a top of funnel tool, podcasts are terrible. You should never create a podcast to try to get attention in the first place. It's going to be a place where people that are already interested in you go deeper down the funnel to hear your expertise, hear longer form conversations, learn more about you. But there are way different ways and better ways to actually get attention at the top of the funnel.
I want to go into a couple ways that brands could start building community for themselves today, leverage organic. What are some recommendations you have for brands today to start doing this? So not podcasting, but community driven.
Yeah. And I wouldn't recommend podcast as a starting point, unless you said a great point, which is to create a content engine, but that's not where to go to get attention. So the very first thing I would do is to start to figure out a few key points. So number one, like I said, who is the main character of your brand? If it's a big brand, you could be looking at a celebrity, an influencer, some other spokesperson. If it's a small brand, just a few people, it's probably going to be a founder or a co-founder. And there's lots of different gradients in between. So the first question is, who is our main character? The second thing I would look at is, what's the best way to get their content out there? And there's got to be a match of how does the main character communicate and how does the audience want to get that information? And hopefully you can find a synergy there of, yeah, we can make this kind of content. And that's also the kind of content that our audience cares about. And then I would really spend some time thinking about your unifying belief. So what is it about what we do or what we think that makes us unique? And the way I think about a unifying belief, you know, the idea of the mission statement, Peter Drucker came up with the idea of the mission statement, I think back in the 1970s. And the mission statement was an imperative for the business to exist. Why does this business exist? And it's the business's why. And what I like to say is unifying belief is a total opposite because nobody actually cares about your why. They care about themselves. So what is it about what you're doing that's in it for me? Am I going to be able to lose weight? Am I going to be a better parent? Am I going to make more money? Am I going to have a better marriage? What is it about what you're selling or saying that's in it for me? And that's really what the unifying belief is about. So coming up with those three things, the who, the main character, the how, what platform they're going to be on, and the what is our unifying belief? That's where it all starts. And then there's a ton more that I go into in the book, but that's where it begins.
What is a marketing hill you would die on?
Probably because I've been spending so much time on the book, you know, literally thousands of hours over the last year. I would say that having an organic way that people find you, you don't even realize how powerful that is until you have it. And I speak from personal experience as somebody who went through this myself over the last four years, building a personal brand, using that personal brand to launch businesses. I mean, the amount of growth you can have, the amount of opportunity you have, just the way it changes everything about your business outlook, I would say you can't buy your way to that. If you can figure out a way to get people interested in you without having to pay to get in front of them, without having to, you know, buy a Super Bowl ad or pay a bunch of money to get people to try your product, if you can have people fall in love with you organically, that is not 10 times better, but it's 1,000 times better. And the metric I'll use to define that is, I always laugh when people say to me, like, I have a ROAS, I have a return on my advertising spend of 6 to 1 or of 10 to 1 or of 30 to 1. Every dollar I spend, I make $30. I'm like, dude, I have a ROAS of 1,000 to 1. I spend nothing and I make 7-8 figures. And our marketing spend is nothing because of all the principles I define in marketing superpowers. So that's something that I will, you know, I'll say until the end. That's a hill I will die on because I've just seen it work time and time again.
Yeah, I was talking to the founder of Chubbies, and he, Preston, he gave a great definition of brand, and that's basically what we're saying here. But the definition of brand is the revenue you have when you turn off your ads, basically new product launches and promotions. So anything like you're doing, and that is the definition of brand, is if you could turn off all your paid advertising today or anything you're promoting and you just have organic, could you still be in business or not? And that is a true definition of brand.
I love that. So I'm going to show you, this is like page 3 of my book. I have a definition of brand also. And the definition I use is, a brand represents every dollar your customer is willing to pay above and beyond what your product is worth. And I like yours too. But if you look at the brands in this world, like the designer brands, look at the LVMHs and the Chanels of the world. They're the most obvious examples. Like, you can buy a bag for $20 or you can buy a bag for $20,000, and they both serve the same function. But the brand is so much more, I'm willing to pay so much more for the brand above what that product is worth.
And if you think about those brands, a lot of those luxury brands they've been around for a long time, showing consistency, showing like building community, sticking with their, like on their roots, like of who they are. I'm not saying they're great, but I'm saying for those type of people who want to invest in them, they've done a lot of stuff to get where they are and be who they are, like those luxury brands. So it's cool to see. But I also want to ask you, where could people follow you? Where could people find the book? Where could people find what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm on all the socials. John David's, the easiest way, just go to johndavids.com, johndavids.com, and you can grab all my socials there, podcast, etc. And then for the book, it's marketingsuperpowersbook.com. It's on pre-sale, and I hope people pick it up and enjoy it.
Well, thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Daniel. Pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. Keep tuning in to hear more great insights from the coolest marketers from around the world. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe and follow the Marketing Millennials podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, I would greatly appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating. It helps bring more marketers into our community.